Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 5th day of September, Anno Domini 2026. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you know what? We are hurtling headlong into the beginning of our 38th year on the air. And about halfway through, no, third of the way through, quarter of the way through, 18th year on Jazz 90.1. This is our birthday month.
Yeah.
Dave, Steve, and I, and Soundbites all have our birthdays in September.
Yeah.
I believe that was a prerequisite to being on
part
the
of
show.
It. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're first. You're the 10th.
I'm the 10th.
18th.
19th.
19th. Oh, it was my late wife. It was the 18th. Sorry.
Right.
19th, and I'm the 20th.
Yep. And Soundbites was the 3rd. So really, Soundbites is the 1st.
Yep.
Well, you can give us a call at 585.
38 years.
38 years.
Who would have thought, you know.
Two of the best years of my life.
30 lousy years.
All right. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. And while you do that, I will read the news. Even if you're not a Mac fanboy, you've got to love the MacBook Neo. Whether you think of it as a high-priced entry-level computer or a low-priced mid-range computer, it's thrown down the gauntlet to the other laptop manufacturers, even in these times of artificially inflated RAM and storage prices. And those other manufacturers are stepping up to the plate. Samsung, Dell, and Lenovo have all announced their so-called MacBook Neo rivals. I won't comment on whether they're really rivals or not. That's a religious argument. If you want to discuss that, you bring the beer. Samsung's entry, the Galaxy Book 6, is a 14-inch laptop running Intel's Wildcat Lake processors, promising a whopping 25 hours of battery life, if you believe them. It starts just a bit higher than the Neo at $800. Dell's entry, which we all thought was the XPS 13, has introduced the 14S. It comes with an aluminum shell and in 4 pastel colors. They also use Intel's Wildcat Lake processors and the same 61.2 watt hour battery as Samsung, so we should see pretty comparable battery life. There's no pricing yet, as Dell's still struggling to lock down decent RAM and storage prices, but they're hoping to come in at about the same price point. Lenovo's entry is the IdeaPad Vibe in both 15 and 14-inch versions. Originally, it'll come with AMD and Qualcomm chips, with Intel's Wildcat Lake to be available, and I quote, later, whatever that means. This one comes in 7 different colors, including mix and match keycaps, and this keyboard is backlit, unlike the Neo. Lenovo is all about customization, so 2 of the models, the gray and the blue, will be upgradable to touchscreens. The RAM is upgradable, as is the SSD. In fact, the Vibe will come with 2 SSD slots. So go nuts. Again, no pricing yet. Ramageddon is killing all of us right now. Like I said, wherever else you think of the Neo, it's been a game changer. Low-end laptops aren't new. Think about Chromebooks or netbooks. But low-end laptops that go a bit beyond the average user's everyday needs without significant compromise is great. Can't wait to see them running Linux. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Neo rivals, Samsung, Dell, Lenovo. And your choices are, can't wait, very intriguing, I'll take a look, meh, and can they run Linux? So far we have 27 votes, and not shockingly, half of them are can they run Linux, followed by meh. And of course, you can vote in the poll. It's real easy. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And once you've done that, you can give us a call about this or dang near any other topic under the sun at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. It doesn't surprise me that the NEO has shaken up the industry. It doesn't surprise me at all. But what does surprise me is how many companies have stepped up so quickly. You know, to have three of them jump right in that fast means that somewhere along the line they were ready.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. And again, the reality is that it only helps us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've been able to buy Chromebooks for a long time, but people are afraid of Chromebooks. People who, you know, I don't know what I want to do with my computer, so the fact that it only has a browser is a real problem for me. Of course, it doesn't only have a browser, but still.
Yeah, that's their mental.
Right, that's their perception.
Mental blockage they
right,
have.
Right. That's the perception, and that has harmed the Chromebook market. But to have a real computer, a real laptop, in that what used to be, let's be honest, what used to be the $250 to $300 range and is now in the $600 to $700 range because of RAM and storage prices is a really good thing. And I do love the idea of the Lenovo having two SSD slots for a certain community, like those of us with an extreme amount of data or who like to play a lot, gamers. Well, they're not really going to be game machines. I mean, the reality is they're like I said in the beginning, they're either high end, they're high low end machines or low mid range machines like the Neo.
Mm-hmm.
And there's simply no getting around that. You know, they come with 8 gig of RAM mostly. Which means that Windows is going to be, at best, problematic. And at worst, horrifyingly bad.
Well, no, Microsoft just said that Windows 11 only needs 4 gigs of RAM.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they said that. It's not true at all.
To boot.
Yeah. You want to run anything else.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's they're not going against that. Nope. They're just saying it will run. Yeah, and I can also walk from here to Buffalo. I'll get there, but not in a timely manner.
It's interesting that for these models to come out so fast, they must have already sort of been most of the way through design and halfway into production.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean that maybe they would have been $1,000 models?
I think what happened was we all knew the Neo was coming.
Yeah.
And somebody at each of those companies went, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're going to take the low-end market that we have owned.
Right. Well, and before the Neo came out, all the rumors about a low-cost Mac were saying $800.
Right.
And when it came out at five.
Well, six.
Six, and then five for education.
Right.
That was shocking to everyone on both sides.
Right. But now it's seven.
Yeah.
Seven and six, because of the RAM prices, again, you can't blame any of these companies. It's not their fault.
Yeah, they had no control over that.
Right. It's the RAM prices.
Yeah.
But now, you know, even at $700, take a look at the laptops that are available now at that price point. They're not high-end machines, and many of them are not as well built. The solid aluminum bodies and the ability, and again, this is something that Macs don't have, the ability to upgrade it, to add more RAM or change out the RAM or change the hard drive or get a dual hard drive system. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on.
Well, with the size of the NVMe drives now so tiny, it's easy to stick another slot in. In fact, I'm working on a Mac studio at the office. It has two NVMe slots in it.
Yep.
And on the higher-end models of a pretty high-end computer, it comes with two drives that are in a RAID configuration, basically.
Right.
So it's
but
even faster.
To get that in a $600, $700 computer, Come on.
Yeah, really.
My desktop has two slots. I've got a 1 terabyte NVMe and a 3 terabyte NVMe. But that's a desktop machine.
Yeah.
And it costs three times the price of these low-end laptops.
It's a desktop machine, but it's the size of a laptop motherboard.
Yeah.
It's real. They all are nowadays.
Even some of the big tower desktops, yep. You open the case and there's a laptop motherboard in there. Yep. Why make a whole nother motherboard?
Right, exactly right.
Yep.
We're finding that these people were ready and they were willing to step up to the plate. And they understood that, you know, Apple was going to eat their lunch if they didn't have something out there in the same price range within $100 one way or the other. It is clear that Mac and Windows people are willing to pay extra. And I get that. Linux people are not.
Oh, I got to share a side story. Get a kick out of this. I was down in the basement this couple weeks ago, cleaning out a lot of my old stuff. You know, I mean, I had old keyboards with the old PS2 connectors that, you know, nobody uses anymore. And I was getting rid of a lot of stuff. And just this past week, I found it was tucked back in the corner, our old computer that we used to print our invoices on. An old 386. So I pulled it out. Still had a VGA monitor and all that on it. So I packed it all up, put it in my little cart, and walked it up to the sidewalk, put it out there. And maybe about a half hour later, I'm sitting on the front porch. Somebody comes along and says, you know, stops to look at it, and it goes, "Does it work?" I go, "It's out at the curb as trash. If you want to play with it, knock your socks off."
Right.
I mean, I think it still had Windows 3.1 on it.
But it looks like a modern computer, and so, oh, cool.
Yeah.
I'll put Windows 11 on it.
Yeah, and
but
the
you
old...
be careful they don't pull something out of it and leave the scattered bits lying around.
That well, that, you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, they took it all. You know, okay, it's good for the scrap metal, at yep. least. The VGA monitor still worked, but it was a small 12-inch...
Yeah.
Little monitor.
And you were happy to get it in those days.
Yeah, and I got rid of it, so I was glad.
We had a very old check printing computer dedicated to just printing checks because we had a case of pin feed checks.
Oh, yes.
And so all we did is write checks out of that. In the old invoicing system, we'd moved on to something new. And we got a big kick when we got to negative $1 million. Because we never put any deposits in. We just wrote checks.
Oh, sure. Because you knew they were coming out of the other account.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
But that Mac Studio, it's annoying how many screws there are of different sizes and different torque values. I've got to do a T3, T4, T5, T6, T7, T8, T10. There's no T9s. So, okay.
What the heck is in a T10? What are they doing with a T10?
Those are the big screws that are holding the logic board into the inner frame.
Oh, okay.
And all right. Of the little cowling connectors for all the ports are the T3s. It's just so many screws, and each one is a different torque value. So we always get a kick out of having the torques.
Right.
But it's kind of fun working in something different for a change.
Yeah. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Matt from Buffalo, New York. What's up, Matt?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? I just want to say thank you for your commitment and service and dedication for helping so many people. You guys are a great asset to the community and everybody you help and reach out to.
Thank you, Matt. That's very nice.
That's what I just want to say. And I'm happy you're here on this holiday weekend because, as I remember, as Nick says, you always do volunteer your time on the weekends, which means so much to me and a lot of other people.
Well, thank you, Matt. That is very sweet. Thank you so much. Thank you.
I just want to, I got a few questions, and I want to bring up a couple topics. Nick, I remember you talking about a app you had with Ubuntu. Speaking of the prices of stuff going up, I ordered one of those $3 things on Backmarket, the Ubuntu flash drive. It's up to like $10.99 now.
Yeah.
So it's like tripled. But it's cool. But I just wanted to know, because I just might like it, just a basic laptop and wipe it. But would there be any way, because I know like with Vine and Windows, would there be any way to put a Linux program on a Chromebook? I think Chromebook is Linux-based. Is there any way to do that? Possibly?
There is the Linux subsystem for Chromebooks. So if you've got a beefy enough Chromebook, I mean, you want at least 4 gigs of RAM, and you know, you don't want the original, like the 2 gig model, but a 4 or 8 gig Chromebook, you can install the Linux subsystem and run Linux on it. In fact, on my Chromebook, I run Thunderbird, and I have run Firefox. Regular Linux versions of those programs on my Chromebook, because it's an 8 gig machine with an i3 processor, so it's beefy enough that it runs fast, and it runs just, you know, it pops up Windows just like any other window would come up. The Thunderbird comes up in a window just like it normally would, so you can do that easily. You just, what you do is you have to go into the settings and turn on Linux. And that takes a few minutes. And then I believe you have to reboot. But once you've done that, now you can go in and install Linux programs just the way you normally would anywhere else.
We've also talked in the past.
Is that like the dev mode, the developer mode? Or I don't know if I want to touch it. I should just get a separate one. I mean, it seems pretty risky.
It's not risky. It's not developer mode as such, but it is a separate kind of operating system. So you want a fairly higher end Chromebook to run things satisfactorily.
See, like, I'm not swimming in that water too deep. Mine is like a 4 gig of, or four, 4 gigabyte of RAM.
Yeah. So it would be slow.
I'll separate that.
Yeah. It would be slow.
A fresh cleaning thing when I get the Ubuntu stick, everything's right there. I mean, it couldn't be any easier. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
We've also talked about Crostini in the past, which lets you run Linux alongside your Chrome OS.
Right.
So it's a container. It's not a VM.
Right.
What's the difference?
Huge difference, yeah. Yeah, right. But yes, and but I you can install full Linux on a Chromebook alongside Chrome OS, essentially. But like you said, if it's not a higher end Chromebook, it's going to be not a pleasant experience.
All right. And I want to just bring up another topic quick. I'm a huge video gamer. I was reading that Sony PlayStation 6, they're going to stop making, I think by 2028, there's going to be no more physical copies of discs, which is really upsetting to me. I mean, how do you guys feel about that?
The
change.org petition, I'm totally not for that. I like to have something in my hand if I buy it. And I mean, I don't know. Things are going in a different direction. And another topic, too, was stuff with all the AI in the school. What are your guys' thoughts, topics, and feelings on all of that?
Well, the big thing, of course, is that it saves them money because they don't have to put a CD drive.
Right.
Or a connector for cartridges or whatever they're going to use.
Everything becomes downloadable. And then on the other side of it, was it Sony? Some big company announced they're removing 500 movies from your video library. Digital video library, because their license is expired and
too bad.
Right, and that's what people have a problem with.
Right, if I have a physical disk.
Right, it's not that you don't have a physical disk. It's that you don't own the medium.
Right,
and so they can take it away anytime they want. My daughter and all of her friends buy CDs and buy DVDs again, rather than download anything anymore.
And then you re-rip them over 10 years in the next better quality thing that came out.
Yeah, exactly. I have a Plex server and I'm slowly putting all of my movies on the Plex.
Hey, like in Rochester, Record Archive is still pretty much rocking out there.
they're doing great.
Physical record albums are making a comeback.
Yep. Thanks, Matt. Yeah, we appreciate all of that.
They're trying with the vinyl now, I believe, you know, with these younger generations. Yep.
Look, music sounds better on vinyl. It's a simple fact. And people are rediscovering that.
Well, yeah, it's the whole generation of kids that grew up listening to crappy MP3s on tiny little earbuds.
And there's somebody did a study, and they found that when kids who spent their lives listening to MP3s go to a concert, they don't like it.
Yeah, it doesn't sound right.
Too much noise, too much overtones and everything else, All right, thanks, Matt. We got to move on, but thank you.
You guys have a nice week, and nice talking with you.
Always a joy, and thank you for the kind words. Bye-bye. There's a backlash about ending physical media. And yes, it's cheaper and easier for the companies. Also, you know, what really a lot of people worry about is that they're going to move to renting, right?
Yeah.
So you don't buy a program, you rent it by the month or the year or the whatever.
Yep.
Xbox is now saying that they're going to limit you to 5 hours a month on their low tier of playing and 10 hours on the medium tier and 15 hours in the high tier. 15 hours a month? I know people who play 15 hours a day.
Yeah.
Of course, you can always buy more time.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're counting on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it was Sony deleting over 500 movies from people's digital libraries.
Yeah.
Because their license with the whoever made the movie ran out.
Yep. I have a Plex server, which means it's a little box in my home. It's a NUC, one of those little mini PCs. Not very powerful, but I've stuck a 2 terabyte drive on it. Spinning drive, doesn't matter. And I rip all my movies to it. And now I play them anytime I want. I own the movie, so making it digital is not against the law, as long as it's a copy for my personal use, which it is, by the way. And so I have all of those, and I can watch them anytime I want. Nobody can take them away from me. And if the drive dies, I've still got the DVD. So, yeah, people have to understand that there is a cost to saving money. And whether you're the one saving the money or somebody else is making the money, there's a cost involved in that. And I understand that. And I'm, you know, these machines here that we're talking about, the Neo and all of its rivals, don't have CD players.
I don't think most PCs nowadays do.
Most don't. Most don't. We've got thumb drives, of course, still. And you can buy a USB CD drive. But how many people even do that?
Well, most folks, I mean, are downloading stuff nowadays. I mean, right. You know, you don't go out and buy the package. You usually just, you know, buy the license online. It gives you the link to the software. You download the software, install it, and they email you a security code or key code or whatever to activate it, and you're up and running.
Right.
There's no more physical, you know, material along with manuals. Right. I mean, manuals are, again, something else that are gone by the wayside.
And you may need to renew that license every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they get you, of course. But The reality is that things are much. It's one of the reasons I love Linux. I own all the programs that I have on my machine. I've got tens of thousands of them available to me. All of them are free. All of them are mine. And only if the company goes out of business or the person who wrote the thing dies, do I not, you know, get a new version of that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright. You got to turn your mic up.
It says it's on.
It is on. Okay.
Now I can hear me.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Al from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Al.
Good morning, guys. A wonderful sunny day to you.
It is a beautiful day, and thank you for coming on Sunday.
Oh, certainly. Certainly.
It was, what's up?
It was a memorable event. Hey, so, as we've discussed before, we're all getting older, and we use various aids for memories. And one of mine is a Google Doc note I keep in my phone, a list of, you know, what to buy at the store, my medicines, my doctor's visits, you know, it's just a memory jogger for me.
Yep.
So, this morning I got a startled notice because I went to open it up, and it said, sorry, we can't open this document. It's unreadable. So I was, like, panicked a little bit because I rely on it so heavily.
Sure.
So I said, well, I'll go to my other devices and look, see if there's a good copy over there. But, of course, they've all synced, and everybody's got the same corrupted version. So my options were getting narrower and narrower. Bottom line for it, and this is what the main reason I'm calling, is to say that what I ended up doing is going to my PC, going into the document with Google Docs, on the PC, which seemed to read it just fine, and then copy the contents over to a brand new file and save that. And I'm back in one piece, though my heart rate is still
high. Yeah. There's also a way to revert to a previous version.
That, you know, if you get an error message like that, which I've never seen before, it never occurred.
Yeah, no, nor have I.
Going into Google Docs, and my next step, if that didn't work, was going to LibreOffice. And just see if you can open it up and read it enough to extract what you need and go from there. So,
yeah. Yeah, it might have been. So you were trying to open this on your phone?
Right, yeah.
It might have been the cache. Clearing the cache on your Android phone sometimes fixes that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So go into settings, apps, Google Docs, storage, clear the cache.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, that would scare me too. I tend to keep that stuff in Google Keep, which is just as dangerous because there's no backup of that either, really.
Yeah.
There's also a way to, in Google Docs, go to the version history of a file, and you might be able to open the previous version from before the corruption.
Well, you're telling me something I've never experienced or explored. So I didn't realize they had that.
Yeah, in the file menu, there's a version history command.
Okay. Okay. I will take a look at that also, because right now I'm rearranging my backup software. I use Reflect so that it's going to back up my Google Drive directory on a regular basis.
Right.
And archive it.
Right.
There's just too much stuff. I mean, I look at this one document. I must look at it 2-3 times a day for, you know, for years. So it's got a lot of history.
Yeah. No, and it is so convenient to have it in Google Docs because you can open it on any device anywhere. But yeah, when it screws up, it's a problem. I agree with you. I don't think I have ever in all the years I've been using Google's Docs or Sheets or whatever. I don't believe I've ever seen an error like that.
Hmm.
Aren't you a lucky guy?
Yeah.
Not really. Well, you know, if you poke at something long enough, you eventually break it.
So. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Well, in that category. But I don't rule out my own nimble little fingers as being the source of the problem, that I've done something else somewhere. I mean, that's the revelation I came to years ago when it came to data protection, that it wasn't viruses, it wasn't hardware failures, it's my 10 little fingers typing away that is really my biggest risk.
They call right. that picnic.
Right.
Problem in chair, not in computer.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yep.
Right.
Okay. Well, I'll leave you be. Thanks again for a good show. I'll keep on listening.
Thank you, Al.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
We had a customer.
The problem is generally the loose nut behind the keyboard.
Yeah. We had a customer come in this week. Something similar happened to her. She was having problems with her calendar. And the other tech support suggested erasing the phone and restoring it clean. To fix a calendar?
Yeah.
And she asked about the data on the phone, and they said it should be backed up. They didn't check. And she lost a bunch of stuff that was on the phone.
Pictures.
And documents from her deceased father. And
what's your name?
Should be backed up, yes, but make check to be sure.
Yeah, and why should be and is.
And why were those things unchecked to not be backed up in the first place?
Right.
Yeah.
No, it
should be. Yeah,
assume there's a backup. Yeah. Never assume that. As a technician, we should never assume that.
Yep. Go look.
Go look.
Go read. Try to restore one of the backed up files.
Right. Right. Verify a backup before you do anything. My machine backs up every night.
Especially something as drastic as erasing the device to install a clean OS.
Yep. And every day I look to see if the stuff I did yesterday is in the backup.
Yep.
Multiple.
Yep.
Yeah. No, it's just, you can't, if you're not backing up, I know we're preaching to the choir here, and I get that, but back up, back up, back up.
Many of you listening here are the IT staff for your friends and family.
That's exactly right.
Make sure they are backing up, too.
Yep. One of the things I did for my wife was I shoved her aside one day and put pCloud on her laptop and set it to automatically back up, which was great because when she passed, I had a backup copy of everything. So that was good. Get a backup. Get an automated backup because never trust people.
Yep.
I don't trust myself. I don't trust anybody else. Remember my motto. You are not paranoid enough when it comes to backups. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Victor, New York. What's up, Don?
Yes, two questions. At last week's program, you mentioned an audio video editor that you really thought was very good. And I missed the name of it. Do you recall what this was?
Caden Live to do video editing on Linux?
No, I'm operating Windows 10.
Yeah, we were talking about a Linux product.
Yeah, I think the thing we were talking about.
Caden works on Windows and Mac and BST.
Oh, there you go.
In addition to Linux.
So, yeah, Caden Live, K-D-E-N Live.
I'll put a link up now that I can.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm on our connection. I can barely hear you. So if you would spell that again for me.
It is K-D-E-N Live, Caden Live. And Steve is putting a link on our website.
Okay, because I heard you say K-B-E-N.
No, there's a link on our website. Just go to our website. You'll see it there.
Okay, soundbites.com.
Org, soundbites.org. O-R-G.
Okay, all right. All right, and the second question is, in terms of updating drivers, I'm getting notices from a couple antivirus programs like AVG and CCleaner that I have some out-of-date drivers, and they would like me to update through those means. Is that the best way to update drivers, or should I go to some other site like Microsoft or Windows itself?
The first way to do it is by doing your Windows up. Are you on 10 or 11?
10 in this case.
The best way to do it is to start at the Windows update and do that first. The standard Windows update, and see if you get those drivers. Because you're on 10, you may not, in which case then I would do it through my antivirus program.
Well, I'd recommend going directly to the company of that driver. So if it's your video card driver, go to the video card maker to download it from there.
Yeah, because sometimes they don't always recommend.
Right.
They'll recommend a generic one, and a generic one could cost you more.
And one of the problems might be there is an updated driver, but you can't use it because you're running Windows 10.
Yep.
So if it tries to install it, that thing's going to quit working.
Especially since it's more and more of them are supporting Windows 11.
Right. That's not a bad thought. Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
All right, Don?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Caden Live is really nice.
Hello.
Very, you know, is it the professional, you know, would somebody at one of the major Hollywood studios use it? No, of course not. But for the average user, it's an exceptional product. And it is free. And it runs on everything, and it's free.
We've had somebody call, just FYI, twice. I keep saying, hello, Soundbites. And I know they're out there because I can see a number, but they're not answering. Hopefully.
Is there a way for you to turn up the volume on the phone?
Yeah, I've got it.
Well, not on the phone, on the radio feed of the phone. Because we've had several people say that the phone feed is very low and hard to hear.
I can only bring it up to how loud we hear them in here.
Okay.
That, and then, I mean,
so there's not a pot on the board for the sound coming from the phone?
No. Rob would have to look into that as far as this new, remember, this is a new
whole new system, VoIP, yep.
And this is a brand new digital system. So there's maybe some inequality there that they've got to, you know, level out,
right,
to bring it up to where back in the old days, you know, we boomed right in there because it was over a regular phone line,
right? It was analog then. Yeah. No, I get that.
We're on the subject of backups.
Yeah,
you know, I've been playing quite a bit with Zorin, and I was also playing around with Linux Mint.
Yes.
So one product, maybe people can learn from my experience, is, you know, I love to play around with this stuff. And if I break it, oh, well, I'll just reinstall it.
Of course.
It's on a machine I'm playing with.
Right.
One product that saved me a number of times, and it's part of Linux, it's called Time Shift.
Yes.
So what I would do was I'd get a lot of stuff loaded to the way I wanted, playing around with it. And then I'd run Time Shift to make a copy of it then. Then I'd go in there and play around. It's the best way to experiment. With, you know, if I goofed it up, it's like, oh, shoot. All right. I go back into Time Shift, and I hit Restore. Bam. I must have done that at least 4 times. Part of it was due to, you know, it's also fighting a cold. Wasn't the clearest thinking, like Al Mosher was saying, you know, our fingers get in our way sometimes. But I did it. And Time Shift, I highly recommend that product.
It is an excellent program. It works very much like Time Machine on Mac OS or like System Restore on Windows. The thing to remember is that it does back up everything. So your backup files are going to be, including the system itself. So your files are going to be quite large. So bear that in mind. And also, if the problem you're having is caused by a misconfiguration in your system, or you know, in the case of Windows, a virus, that backup may also have that misconfiguration or virus.
Yeah.
So it is not always a panacea, right? It's not always a correct solution to a problem. But in Dave's case, for example, since what he's doing is making a snapshot, fooling around and screwing it up, bring back the snapshot, now he's good again. And that's exactly what it's really for. It does create enormous files, but it does make a restoration to a backup point.
And hard drives used to be cheap.
You used to be able to get a 3-terabyte drive for a couple of $100. And so you could do that. Not anymore so much. So be aware that it is a great solution in certain circumstances. No solution is perfect. No backup solution is perfect. So have multiple backups in multiple ways in multiple places.
That was Don again. And to explain to him, because I didn't want to, you know, you guys were trying to have a conversation. And this is a very small studio.
Right.
So I had to hang up on him. But what I was trying to convey is, if he's uncomfortable knowing the manufacturer of the card, then what I would suggest is then go with that particular product that's saying, all right, we're going to update it. Give it a try. If not, the best we can offer you is then take it to a repair center that is more confident in, you know, updating the drivers.
Yeah.
It's not something that we're going to teach, because if you hit the wrong key or do something wrong, we can't be responsible for it.
If it's a name brand computer like Dell, Lenovo, HP, you can go to that website, and that should give you all of the drivers for all of your hardware.
Right. You put in your serial number, and it tells you everything you need for that machine.
Yeah, and if you're not comfortable doing that stuff, again, take it to a repair center. Yeah, I know it's going to be, you know, a little bit of an expense, but if you're uncomfortable doing it, you got to weigh the factors. Is it me messing it up, or doing somebody that's talented and knows what they're doing, performing those updates? And critically, do you really need to worry about that? Because it's a Windows 10 machine. I wouldn't worry about it.
And as I mentioned, it may be telling you there's an update to a Windows 11 driver that will then stop your machine from working.
Yeah, right, and right. If the machine is working, don't worry about those drivers, because it's a Windows 10 machine.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
I mean, I was trying to be polite about it, but, you know, I mean, I'm, again, also not going to offer advice, just like we do not and have never offered advice on how to go into RegEdit and, you know, work in the registry. None of us here want to be responsible for somebody accidentally hitting a keystroke or deleting a key and then all of a sudden bricking their machine.
Right.
And losing everything.
My friend Dave from RIT, who worked for me for many years, was fearless about going into the registry. And I used to tell him, you screw it up, you'll be here all night fixing it. That's on you. I'm not going to stay.
Yep.
He worked for me, so he was a systems administrator as well. And I told him, it's on you. You drive a machine down, it just better be up tomorrow morning.
Yeah, machine's needed for an 8 a.m. class. It better be working.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I don't play in the registry.
Wayne from Rochester, please call back.
Do we have Wayne? Wayne is gone. Wayne came and went.
He was
ephemeral Wayne.
Yeah, he was there, and I don't know how he got on speaker, but I had him on speaker and I went to transfer him. Anyways, he's lost.
He's lost. Wayne, please call back. We'd love to talk to you. In the meantime, I will read some news. Microsoft has confirmed that the KB5120998 August 2026 non-security preview update is reverting mouse settings on Windows 11 systems. According to user reports, mouse cursor personalization settings are either being changed or reset automatically after installing the update. More importantly, affected Windows 11 users will not be able to restore the previous mouse settings after they are reverted. Microsoft says it affects only non-English language PCs. There seems to be an issue with mouse drivers in general, however. Recent updates have made the USB mouse unusable in Windows Recovery or caused the mouse cursor to disappear in Classic Outlook, not to mention losing all desktop settings after that update. Luckily, this is so far an optional update, so I hope you didn't install it. Microsoft is asking its customers this week to ignore alerts that the Defender antivirus has been turned off after installing the latest Defender update. The erroneous alerts appeared on affected systems in the Windows Security app and prompt users to tap or click to turn on Microsoft Defender antivirus. Apparently, despite the warning, the antivirus is functioning correctly. Of course, you just have to trust Microsoft about that. Microsoft says it's working on a fix and release it to affected customers in a future Microsoft Defender antivirus update. Speaking of Defender, Microsoft has investigated an issue that caused Defender for Office 365 security software to mistakenly flag legitimate Google search links as malicious. Affected users are seeing opening this website might not be safe warnings when trying to open the blocked hyperlinks. The issue seems to be caused by an inaccurate security classification, an absolute mistake and not done on purpose whatsoever. Copying the links, pasting them directly into a browser does not bypass the warning. What should come as absolutely no surprise to anybody is the fact that you don't get this warning if you just use Bing. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Wayne from Webster, New York. What's up, Wayne?
Well, good afternoon. I have three questions, and they're all highly the same. I tried using sudo apt-get install for a program, and I got nothing for a response. I'm a little surprised at that, because usually that works out pretty well. And but the second part of the problem is if you take a tar file, can you open it in home or in downloads or
usually what I do, unpack it. I usually myself, put it down the downloads folder, extract it there.
Okay.
Open up the extracted folder. Right click on some area that's, you know, not a folder and say open up in terminal. And then run my commands from there.
But any tar file, you should be able to open by right-clicking on it and saying extract.
Okay.
A tar file, for everybody who's not a Linux person, we're talking Linux here. A tar file is essentially a zipped file. It's when you have multiple files you want to send as a single file, you put them all together and send it as one file.
Well, here's the other part. When I downloaded the file, I got and I'm going to open it up. You got tar xvf. You put in the name of what it is, and then you got .tar. So far so good. And then usually the next part is usually a compression. And they got an odd thing here. For a compression, they got .xz, as in zebra. I'm wondering, is that really a compression deal? Does it matter? How do we handle that?
Are you talking on the download selection? Say you're going to download
I downloaded the file that I need. It's a tar file. I know how to generally open tar files. And usually, I usually use either gzip or I use bz2. And in this case, they got xz, as in zebra. And I don't know anything about this xz.
Oh, z, xzf, yeah. Okay.
It's a new compression utility that's getting more popular.
What's going on here?
It's just another form of, like Steve was saying, a compression.
Yeah, it's a new compression format that's gaining in popularity. Gives you smaller files than gzip and some of the other compression formats.
What do I have to do to uncompress this stuff?
Usually, all you got to do is click on the file, right click on the file. One of your menu options is extract. You hit extract, it opens up that little packet, puts it in that same folder. And, you know, it decompresses it.
Okay.
Then you can double click on that, open it up, see the files. Now, I like to normally, once I'm in that folder, right click on an open area and say open up in terminal and do the install from there.
I see. Okay. Well,
you should also
certainly willing to give that a good chance. Thank you very much for your information.
Thank you. Yeah.
You should also be able to do man XZ and get the manual entry for it to show you all the parameters and examples.
You can basically say on XZ the file name, but it's usually XZ, not XZF.
I think he hung
up. Okay.
Oh.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Take care.
Yeah, there are multiple, as with Windows and the Mac, there are multiple different file compression systems that are available. Tar and Zip and 7-Zip and XZ and lots of them. All right, that music tells us the first hour of this show is done, but do not despair. There's another hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's a whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, or toll-free at 800-790-0415. We are going to take a slightly longer break, so feel free to go get yourself a beverage or whatever. Take a little bio break, but don't forget to come back because there's a whole lot more sound bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the beginning of our 38th year on the air. We are Soundbites. And I'm Nick Francesco. But we did that.
Yeah.
And we have Ron from Greece, New York on the line. What's up, Ron?
Yeah, hi. There's that big data breach. And they said that you should freeze all your credit and also freeze your checks. I guess there's a way to freeze your checks. I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, we've got a link on freezing your credit already, but I haven't heard about freezing checks.
Well, I think if you
just don't write a check, but if someone gets your checkbook and
right, I don't know how you freeze your checking account. I would imagine you just call the bank and tell them don't honor any checks for me.
Yeah, the guy that had he was a former big IT guy. He said it was on Good Morning America, one of those, and I caught it really quick, and I wasn't sure.
Yeah, basically,
I never write a check though, so I don't know if my checking account is
your credit. Depending if you got a debit card, it comes out of your checking account anyway, generally speaking. But if you have a checking account and you want to freeze it, you either make contact directly with your bank, although either by phone or by walking into the local branch, although some mobile apps let you do it. You know, the app from that bank sometimes let you do the same thing. But that depends on the app and the bank it's on. So your best bet is to just give them a call or stop in.
Each of the three major and four minor agencies, technically, you would need to do separately.
For credit.
For freezing credit, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'll see if
I can... You can freeze your credit card, but that's not the same as freezing your credit.
Right. If you freeze your credit, nobody can get a new credit card or a new loan in your name.
Right. So they are two different things.
Right. So if you want
to then buy a new car, you got to ask them which agency, ask the dealer which agency they use, unfreeze your credit so they can run your report.
Right. Right. But yeah.
Yeah, they're worried about people's stealing your person, you know, your identity.
Right. Exactly right. It is so easy nowadays.
Freezing your checking account or putting a hold on your checking account, you call the bank and ask them to do it. But then it stops you from making any purchases,
too. But
then
your debit card won't work, though.
Right.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, and that's the problem with all of these things.
Double-edged sword.
Right. That's why a lot of people just use the app. They freeze their credit on the app. And then if they want to buy something, they unfreeze the credit on the app, make the purchase, freeze the credit again. It's a three-step process, but it is certainly safer.
So I wanted to thank you for your service, and I want to say happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary from the Flintstones.
Very nice. Well done. Thank you, Ron. Thanks.
Thank
bye-bye.
You,
yeah. All right. I'm going to read some news. I'll read the Google and Apple news. The new September Android drop, not surprisingly, has some Gemini flavor, but there are non-AI goodies too. Your messaging threads are getting prettier and more useful, and those nifty motion assist dots that began appearing last week are rolling out widely. And even the Gemini expansion is not without utility. And since this is an Android drop rather than a Pixel drop, these features are coming to a wide range of devices. Of course, when you get them depends on your carrier. I have a Pixel phone, so I get them immediately. If you have a Samsung or phone or on, you know, Motorola with some other brand, they will take longer to get to you. A new market intelligence report suggests that Apple will be paying four times more for iPhone 18 Pro memory than it did for last year's model. TrendForce says that Apple won't be passing on the full impact to customers and will be increasingly look to services revenue to offset higher hardware manufacturing costs. Apple announced significant price increases across most of its products back in June, stating that it had done everything possible to delay this, but no longer had any choice.
Except the phone. So we're all worried to see what's going to happen next week when the new phones get announced.
The phone-ageddon has borked all of us,
yep.
And including Apple and oh well. Again, it's none of the manufacturer's fault. And, you know, we can rage at them all we like, but it is not their fault. Last month, Google updated its homepage to replace its iconic search button with various AI features. The move was the latest sign of the tech giant succumbing to the draw of AI that remains deeply flawed and the staggering amount of misinformation that comes along with it. Even the experience of shopping online is starting to look dramatically different, and consumers may be paying the price. According to a recent experiment by e-commerce SEO company ProductRise, the same exact products are showing up at 21.6% more expensive on average in Google AI mode compared to a traditional search. In this economy? So be careful how and where you search and what you click on. Just as a quick reminder, anytime you do a search, if you then type /AI, -AI, you will get a result without any AI attached to it on Google search. Apple last month only managed to produce a few hundred units a day of its upcoming foldable iPhone because of the company's extremely high quality control standards, according to Nikkei Asia, citing supply chain sources. Multiple reports have suggested the iPhone Ultra's production has faced hurdles because of how difficult the device is to build, with the hinge structure and display durability testing having been the principal bottlenecks. Those issues were thought to have been resolved during trial production to Foxconn, but the production sources now claim that Apple carried out an additional verification process in August for the foldable iPhone to make sure it can be mass-produced according to its specified design. On Thursday, Google released security updates to patch 12 vulnerabilities, including one that has come under active exploitation in the wild. While Google acknowledged that an exploit exists in the wild, it did not reveal any details about the nature of the attacks or who is behind them. This is done to assure that a majority of the users are updated with a fix and to prevent other threat actors from exploiting it, so make sure you're updated. Mozilla has officially launched an ad blocker for Firefox on iOS after testing the feature over the last few weeks. Not every ad will be blocked, though. Mozilla says ads served directly by a website or ads shown in search results will still appear. Unsurprisingly, sponsored shortcuts and other sponsored content shown by Firefox when you open a new tab won't be blocked either. And, of course, we'll never block you. Well, rarely. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 800-790-0415. Look, Apple is having the same problem everybody's having. Prices, RAM prices are ludicrously through the roof these days.
And this is going to stay that way.
And so are storage prices. And you're right, no end in sight. And it's all because, you know, God forbid we don't have AI crammed into every conceivable nook and cranny in every possible place it could ever possibly be.
One of the AI company CEOs said something the other day about we need more people to use it, but then we're spending so many tokens, we need billions, hundreds of billions of dollars, or we're going to go bankrupt. And one of the
that was Anthropic.
Was it? And so one of the comments was, so go bankrupt already and get us out of our misery of
yes,
all this AI slap.
That's exactly right. It's one of those deals where we're not profitable and it's your fault.
Yeah.
No. I do not believe that is the case.
Mm-hmm. We're not profitable because you're using the product too much.
Yeah.
That's the stupidest thing ever.
I do almost all of my AI locally. I run on one of my older machines, my old desktop. I run an Ollama instance, and I run my own AI. So it's slow, and it's certainly not as up-to-date as, you know, the latest ChatGPT, but it certainly does everything I need it to do. It does it quickly enough for my purposes, and it's free.
Wait, one question. Aren't you retired?
I am retired.
What hurry are you in?
Look, instant gratification isn't fast enough. So going at like 17 tokens a second is still good enough for me, though.
How soon we forget how far we've come.
I remember the days when you would come into work, turn on your computer, go get a cup of coffee,
yep,
chat with some people, come back to your desk, and it would still be booting up.
Yeah.
And you were happy to have it that quick.
Oh, hell yeah.
And you know, I remember when... I remember when 2400 baud modems came in, and suddenly stuff on BBS is scrolled past too fast to read.
Couldn't quite read, so you tried to practice reading faster.
So, well, I had to rewrite my I've written a terminal program in Forth, and I had to rewrite it to spool to disk so that I could read it. You know, it would buffer to disk so I could read it at my speed rather than the speed it was coming in.
What I would do is sit there and put the pipe, so it would sit there and pause. And
oh, sure.
Had to hit the enter key or space bar.
Yep.
And it would go to the next page.
Yeah, you can do it that way, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Different tricks that we would come up with.
And then, of course, we got the 9600 baud modems and what was the next one up from 9600?
57.6.
57.6.
Yep.
And, you know, all of those in the 14.4s. And we, you know, we used Bluehost and Blue Wave and those things to just download a whole stack of messages at once, answer them at our leisure, and then upload the answers. And I mean, life was very different back in those days. Now it's, everybody's on Reddit and all those other things, and it's instantaneous. You get, I still am annoyed by things like Reddit. When somebody asks for help and somebody else responds, why are you doing it that way, you idiot? No, that is not helpful.
Right. That's one thing that ticks me off about some of the boards, and I just get off of them. You know, you ask a question or somebody on the board will ask a question, and other idiots out there, that's the only polite way to put them, have to throw insults.
Yep.
versus saying, gee, I wish I could help you. No, they got to criticize.
Even I wish I could help you is not helpful.
Right. Or I don't know.
Right. Don't answer.
It's better than, you know, throwing out insults.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's someone had posted that, you know, I ask a question on a forum. I log in with a different username and make a bad answer.
Yeah.
And more people will correct my bad answer.
Then we'll answer the original question.
Answer the original question, yeah.
Exactly right.
Because they love correcting people, but they won't really help you out
or
to front.
What gets me is I'll go in the forum and say, ask a question, and I get 10 different answers not even related to my question.
That's exactly right.
It's like, wait a minute. What about they got their opinions about something else? And it's like, I didn't ask about that.
Any answer that starts with you should be using,
yeah,
I just move on to the next one. I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't care what your opinion is. I need help with my problem.
Like I say, opinions are like belly buttons. Everybody's got one.
And they're all full of lint.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's better than the other saying.
Except for us, of course.
Yeah. Better than the other saying that ends with, and no one wants to see them.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Which I think has been attributed to both Judi Dench and Betty White. Except for us, of course. So you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We'll at least attempt to give you an answer that is some way related somehow to something much like the question you actually asked. That's our dang near almost a guarantee.
We try.
So do give us a call. But yeah, we don't promise we've got the answer, but we promise we'll say something. That's that's how that works for us. We're really not. You know, a couple people have asked me these last couple of weeks, where can I get a cheap laptop? Well, the only place you're going to get a cheap laptop is when you buy from Amazon Renewed, where I just ordered a laptop. I just ordered a laptop, and I admit it. I got it from Woot, actually. I got it from Woot, and it's an 8-gig i5 laptop with a 256-gig SSD, and it only cost me $120. Now, it's a refurb, so it may come a little scratched up. It's going to
Scratches do not affect the performance.
Exactly right.
It's always a gamble. Is it refurbed because someone didn't like it and returned it?
Right.
Or is it because someone had problems with it and returned it?
Right.
Theoretically, it's been
those problems have been fixed.
Yeah.
Theoretically.
Yeah.
I loved it.
And this is from Amazon, so generally speaking, you can trust them.
Yeah.
And I can always return it if it really doesn't work at all. And I don't care what version of Windows it's got on it. It's going to live with Linux. So, you know, I don't care about any of that. Day one, I'll remove the BitLocker. And then, you know, day two, because it takes a day. Day two, I'll remove Secure Boot, put Linux on it, and put Secure Boot back on.
They've got the ThinkCenter M80Q.
Yeah.
$299, 16/256.
Yep.
$579 with 32 and 2 terabyte.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cheap computer.
That's a pretty cheap computer these days. And again, it's a 10th
gen CPU. We're on 14th gen now, but 10th gen is fine.
Right. And that's the point. You get something that's a little older, a little bit slower. But honestly, for what I'm doing, I'm not a gamer.
Yeah.
I don't care if I can't run Gods of War.
Right. And that's one of the biggest things to look at when you're buying a used computer. RAM and storage is pretty easy to compare against. But it says it's an Intel CPU. Which one?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, not just is it an i3 or an i5 or an i7. Which gen is it?
What generation?
And which model of that gen?
Yep.
That generation.
How many cores are in it?
Yeah, so you find that $199, you know, 7th gen computer. It's already 7 years old, 8 years old.
Right.
Because we're on 14th gen now.
Right.
But I can't get over that.
And some 15s are coming too.
That I put Linux on. And, you know, for I upped it to 32 gig. But it screams, you know, because it's not Windows.
Right.
And that thing is no bigger. Heck, what's the best thing? If you were to take, like, ramen noodles, you know how big square those are?
Yeah.
Stack two of them. That's how big that case is.
Yeah, they're mini. They're little mini. They're the hockey, giant hockey pucks, or they're Mac minis.
Matter of fact, because I bought it and set it all up while my wife was out of town. When she came back, you know, I says, well, I got my new computer out. She goes, just looking around, she goes, where is it? And on the back of my two monitors, you know, I have the arm, I set the thing up there. I Velcroed it on there. I says, here it is. She goes, get out. I says, yeah, that's it. It's all I need. And it's doing everything. It's working my banking programs, and it's doing all the other stuff I wanted to do on that little computer. Nope. And it's running Linux, and I'm not getting annoyed with all the darn, especially this last time with the Windows update. That caused some major issues
for everybody
with my computer that I wanted doing all this other stuff and this. And it's like, wait a minute, I'm losing control of my computer. I paid for it. Microsoft didn't buy it and everything else. Yeah, I'm using their OS, and that's why. That was it. And I buckled down and spent about 2 weeks playing around with Linux and everything else and just getting back into it. Because I played with it before. I had it on my Pi 400.
Right.
And played with it. So I was not that unfamiliar with it, but got back into it heavily to where now I'm doing everything, you know, as far as doing the time shift so I could try to break it, because that's just my nature. Yep. I love to experiment. Yeah,
of course, that's what it's for.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not it's going to burn the house down or anything else. So I got to start over again. Oh, well, I'm retired.
Read a story where someone put their ramen in the microwave, started a fire that almost burned the house down because they missed the instruction that said add water.
Yeah. Oh.
Reading instructions is important in every walk of life.
I've said this many times. The difference between the guru and the average user is the guru reads the instructions.
Yep.
Or RTFM. At least reads the screen when he pulls down a menu.
Yeah.
Yeah, RTFM.
Yeah, this laptop here is 14 years old, and it runs super great. It's got XFCE on it, a very lightweight Linux. Does everything I need it to do, not a problem.
What gen is it?
I ordered, Gen 10, 10th gen.
No, your current one.
Oh, this one is a fourth gen, third gen, something like that. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, and it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it runs great. Yep.
Yeah. The one I just ordered is, I'm sorry, it's only got 128 gig SSD, 8 gig of RAM, Core i3 with 10th gen i3.
Well,
it's a low-end machine. It's a 12-inch, 11.6-inch.
I got the same type of thing off of Woot.
Yeah.
When you mentioned that one, I went in and on Woot, and I found this one that because I want to take it out to do my POTA, you know, ham radio stuff. And it's a small 12-inch screen. It's got a touch screen, only 8 gig of memory, or 8 meg of memory, and I think it was a 512K meg hard drive.
Yep.
It works great because I'm only running a couple applications on it. I don't need a speed demon.
Exactly,
and I only
right.
paid $99 for it.
That's exactly right. This was $120, and then there's, you know, shipping and tax, but this is $120, and it's one of those two-in-one, so you can fold it over into a tablet kind of thing.
I'm always afraid of those because the hinges have so much trouble with wires going through them anyway.
Yeah.
And now you fold it all the way over or twist it around and fold it back down.
I have one of those, yeah. I won't be doing that much.
Yeah.
I will certainly do it because I want to see it happen, but
yeah.
I'm not going to be doing it much, so that doesn't bother me. But I wanted to, you know, what I don't have is a light, easy-to-carry laptop in case this one dies.
Mm-hmm. Back up.
Back up.
You need a backup for your computer, too. So many people who run small businesses bring their computers in.
It makes me nuts.
My computer's broken. And I run my business on it. I need it back now. Well, you can't fix it now.
Right.
It might take a day or two.
If you have a second computer, and if you've done something like time shift or
time machine,
or even Windows Restore, you can take that second machine, turn it into your first machine, and move on.
Yeah. We'll often tell
people that's a reason to use those, because now if it's your business, you really need that.
Yeah. Don't wait until your computer dies to get a new one.
Right.
Get a new one while the old one's still working, so then you have a spare if something goes wrong with the new one for a while.
We did that when I was at RIT. We bought laptops for all the faculty, and we bought a few extra.
Yep.
So, and they sat in a closet, and we had, you know, faculty who came to us and said, I was on my way into work this morning and I left my laptop on the roof of the car and I got to teach a class in half an hour. Here's a laptop. We back up your machines as long as they're on our network. So I've got all of yesterday's stuff from you. Here it is. It's going to take 10 minutes to download because we're at RIT and the network's super fast. Here you go. Go teach. Done. But that takes time and it takes money and it takes effort. But in those instances where you absolutely need it, now you absolutely have it.
Yep.
It makes sense to me, and it makes sense to have that stuff available to you. All right, we're going to go back. Oh, we're going to take a break instead. All right, we can do that. Larry, we have Larry from Rochester on the line, but he's going to wait on the line. And we'll get back to you after the break, Larry. So don't go too far. We're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that with your support, we continue to be solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just a couple of minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have, hold on.
Larry.
I wasn't ready. Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys. I have a little bit older Apple MacBook, and I decided to put Ubuntu on it. And I did, you know, followed all the instructions. I had it on years ago, and I used it as a dual boot. But since I have a newer laptop, I decided I'd just make this one just strictly Linux. I downloaded the latest stable Linux onto a thumb drive and tried to install it. And for some strange reason, I couldn't. Everything I could look up finally said that, you know, I have a Mac universe. And just about everything I have talks to each other. So it said I was probably having a problem there, turn off Wi-Fi or something like that on the laptop. So I did, and then I hooked it up to the Ethernet with a cable. And I was still unable to get Linux on it. So it asked me to go and reformat the drive to, I think, XFAT32 or something like that. I did that. And I still can't download it. I'm a bit mystified.
All right, what error message do you get?
Beg your pardon?
What error message do you get?
Oh, God.
Is it a problem downloading, a problem writing to the flash drive, or a problem installing?
A problem installing.
So are you using, what is it, Etcher, Belina Etcher, to write the flash drive?
I did use that. That was the first time I ever used it, but it said use Etcher, and I actually downloaded it, and that's where things stalled. I got frustrated. Frankly, I haven't looked at it in a week, but I was just sitting here, and I thought, let me give you a call and just see if there's something I missed, because I did use Etcher.
Yeah,
because you have to write the flash drive in a specific format.
Right, you can't just copy the ISO over to the flash drive. You have to write it with Belina Etcher.
And then it should show up in the boot manager. Is this Intel Mac or Apple Silicon?
This is an Intel.
Okay.
Because usually Balina Etcher will start up, and, you know, you first point it to the file that you want it to grab. And then the next item is to, where's it going to put it to?
Pick the flash drive, yeah.
It'll pick the flash drive. And then the third button is go ahead and create the image. And you just sit back and you watch that little bar go across as it's, you know, writing all the files. And then once it's done, it goes back and says, all right, we're verifying it. Once it's done verifying, it'll say, okay, you want to make another copy or you're done.
Oh, okay. I didn't do that.
That's what you got to do.
Well, as soon as the show is over, I'm going to go do that again and see what happens.
All right.
Yeah, you can't just copy the ISO to the flash drive.
It won't do it.
I'm okay, also.
So that's what my problem was. I tried to just copy it straight there and it didn't go.
No. Yeah, that's why it's not working for you. Balina Etcher actually creates the image, making it a bootable image. So when you reboot it with that flash drive in the machine, it's going to say, oh, do you want to install this operating system? It'll ask you whether you want to install it, try it. It usually gives you a menu option. You pick the top one, and it'll install it for you.
I actually want to install it and use that as my Linux machine.
Yeah, it'll do it.
I've also posted a link on installing Ubuntu on a Mac, and they talk about a couple of disk utility commands to create the flash drive. But Etcher is a whole lot easier than doing terminal commands.
Well, the reason I also like Balina Etcher, it won't let you accidentally delete your main drive. It will only write to external drives.
Yeah, sometimes these disk copy programs.
Yeah, they'll say, you sure you want to do this? And it'll wipe out your primary drive. Balina Etcher will not let you do that.
Right.
Okay. Well, as soon as the show is over, I'm going to go do it again.
Oh, very exciting.
All right, give us a call back next week and let us know how you made out.
Okay, I will do, and thank you so much.
Thanks,
Larry. Yeah, yes, and many people miss that step, and it is understandable because with so many other things, you just copy it to the thumb drive and you're done.
Yeah.
That's not the case with an ISO. You have to burn it in a specific program.
You got to copy the contents of the ISO,
right?
Not the ISO.
And it gets set up in such a way that it is bootable, so that when you plug it in,
install it.
Right. You go to your Mac and you hit the whatever key it is that brings up the boot menu and
option.
Option, right. You hold the option key down while it's booting, and that brings up the boot menu. And you say, I want to use the EFI drive. And you select that, and then it boots from that. But you can't do that if it's just seeing the ISO. It has to see the properly set up thumb drive.
That's why
And Balina Etcher does that.
Yeah, yep. Balina Etcher is so darn easy because there's literally just two steps. You download the file. I download it to my desktop. Right. So the ISO is sitting there. I start up Balina Etcher. Start it up. It automatically, opens up the first one that once you select the ISO you want to do on your desktop, select it, go to the second button, what flash drive do you want to do it, and then start it. It doesn't get any simpler than that.
Yeah, it writes to it, and then it verifies it, so you got a good write.
And it'll even do a second one just in case you want to do a backup.
Right. So it is real easy and real simple, and Balina Etcher runs on both Windows and Mac. I don't know if it runs on Windows and Linux.
Yeah.
I don't know if it runs on Mac.
Yep.
It does. Okay.
Oh yeah, all three.
So
platforms.
You should be able to run it on any of those, and I use it. I use it quite regularly.
It's the only tool I use because, like you say, it won't inadvertently delete some partition or something else that I didn't mean to select.
I've been playing with Ventoy lately. Ventoy is a program that you put on a thumb drive. And then you do copy the ISOs to it, just like you would any other file. Then when you plug it in, Ventoy comes up and says, oh, I have these versions of Linux on my drive. Which one do you want to install?
Oh, yeah.
I've got about six of them on the thumb drive I'm using right now.
Oh.
And, of course, you can have as many as you can fit on the thumb drive, right? So, most of them are a couple of gig, and I've got a 64 gig thumb drive, so I got plenty of space. even with the Ventoy program.
Well, I wound up going online and getting these cases from Amazon that hold 3.5-inch floppies.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like I said, when I was doing my house cleaning, all of a sudden I found a bunch of, I found a 750, a 500, and a terabyte.
Not 3.5-inch floppies, 3.5-inch hard drives.
Hard drives, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And, that makes more sense to me.
Sorry if I misspoke. But, you know, and I wanted to use them. So I found these cases, and they have the USB 3 on them, so I can just put the drive in it, and now I got extra storage and larger boot drives for, you know, installing operating systems and all this other stuff. Matter of fact, the terabyte one, I wound up backing up my wife's, all her files before I got rid of her machine and wiped it and got it in backup just in case.
I tend to use, go ahead.
I was backing up a customer hard drive the other day, Windows format. So it was XFAT. And you know, so I started the backup and then walked away. Came back an hour later to check on it. It said about 4 days remaining.
That's a machine that needed backup.
That computer only has a USB 2 port.
Oh, wow.
I moved it to a USB 3.1 computer in 3 hours.
Yeah.
To copy 600 gigs.
You just made me think. I've got a couple of spinning drives, which are still faster than USBs. And I might just grab one of the 160s or 250s, put Ventoy on that, from that.
It keeps seeing you do a thumbs up and putting a thumbs up into YouTube.
I can have a thumbs up.
There you go.
Oh, there we go. Well, hold on. Let me see.
That one's delayed.
Yeah. I see the delays. I don't see what's going on. Oh, you've got captions on, too. I do have to say, Google has done some really amazing things with that stuff. I'm quite impressed with the live captioning and things like that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Spencerport, New York. What's up, Dave?
Yes, hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I'm new to Frontier, and I'm having a lot of trouble trying to get my television to work and on my system in that. And I'm just wondering, I did Google it, and the number seems to be compatible with a new system. I'm just wondering if we could check that out. Is there a way to check that out?
Okay, first, are you connecting via Wi-Fi or through a cable wire?
Wi-Fi.
Okay. And when you try to connect, does it come up and say can't connect?
No. It basically is searching the TV, I'm searching for it, and it will not connect. It says it's not able to connect to the network.
So it never finds your network router.
I did speak with the customer service, and what had happened is they had sent me a new router, another router to place by the TV. But when I use my phone right next to the TV, according to the customer service, they're seeing that being used, but they're not seeing the TV. I'm not able to connect to the TV.
Okay.
I'm just wondering if I did Google the number of the TV, and it says that it is connect to the router.
Wi-Fi is pretty much Wi-Fi. So
Wi-Fi 2, Wi-Fi 3.
Are you
using WPA 2, WPA 3?
The next the encryption, yeah. Are you on the Wi-Fi 6 or Wi-Fi 7 is out now?
But what type of TV and what's the number?
The TV is a Philips TV. I believe it was purchased. It's an older one. The number on that is a 55PL5601-F7.
It may.
F as in Frank?
Yes, F7, F as in Frank, yes.
It may only support 2.4 gigahertz if it's an older device, so you may have to go into your router setup and temporarily disable 5 gigahertz. I'm trying to see in the spec list if it says. I have to do that with some older gaming consoles. 802.11ac, so it's Wi-Fi 4. No, 5. AC is 5 with multiple antennas, but it doesn't say what encryption it supports. So with Wi-Fi 5, it should do both AES, which is the better encryption to use.
Well, what matters is what encryption is already in the modem.
Yeah.
Is in the Wi-Fi router. Yeah, it only does WPA and WPA2, so if you're using WPA3, it will not connect. So, and I actually had this problem with a version of Linux I tried to install. It wouldn't connect.
Yeah.
I thought it's not finding the driver. What it ended up being was it was defaulting to WPA3, and I only had WPA2. So
that you would have to go into the Wi-Fi router box admin console to change the encryption it's using.
Right. So what you need to do
is it a Frontier Wi-Fi or is it your own Wi-Fi router?
It is a Frontier.
Okay. So you may not be able to get into the management. You may have to have them do it.
So what you need to do is ask the people at Frontier if it is a WPA3 only router. If that is true, the TV will not be able to connect. It either won't connect. Okay. It won't even see the network at all.
So you have to have a router downgrade to WPA2, which is fine.
For most people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
WEP was broken, but WPA is fine.
So I guess my question to you then, if it's only a WPA3 only router,
right?
Will I need to get another TV?
Or you will call Frontier and ask them, can they downgrade it to a router that does WPA2? Those are your two choices.
Okay.
Most devices these days will do both WPA3 and WPA2.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to pick the right one. But a much older machine probably came out before the WPA3 standard. So it certainly wouldn't have the capability of doing that.
Oh, okay. So then I'll ask them if they can downgrade to a 2 type router.
WPA2 encryption on the Wi-Fi.
Problem.
Yeah, WPA2 encryption. That's the thing to ask them, just to make sure they get it right. WPA2 encryption.
Okay.
And clearly your router is not doing it now,
so
whether it can.
I beg your pardon. I'll try that.
Clearly your router is not doing it now, whether it can or not, I can't tell you. But so don't let them tell you it's doing WPA2 because it is clearly not.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Yeah. Wi-Fi is not as easy as people tend to think. You just flip on Wi-Fi and magic is happening.
The wonderful thing about standards is there's so many of them to choose from.
There's so many to choose from. And they're not all 100% compatible. Like I said, almost every device on the planet will do both WPA2 and WPA3 these days. But which one it defaults to may be different. So, for example, like I said, I installed a Catchy OS. As a matter of fact, I may go back and play with it again today. I installed Catchy OS on an old laptop, and it wouldn't connect to anything. And I got angry and reinstalled XFCE. But then I realized that the problem was that it didn't do, it was defaulting to WPA3, and I needed to do WPA2. And so I may go back and play with that. And they are, as Steve said, for the average user, they are both fine as long as you've got a decently long and complex password. But you have to pick the right one or it won't work. And again, if you have a much older machine the TV that Dave has, it may not do WPA3. It may not even be a choice.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't built into that machine. The newer radios, the Wi-Fi radio wasn't built into that machine. So you would have to have a modem that will downgrade itself to WPA2. Now, again, the router from Frontier may be able to do that, but you don't have control over it. That would have to be turned on by the folks at Frontier. So he would have to just give them a call and say, I need this to be able to do WPA2. And they will either say, we have to send you a different modem, or here we go.
Did he say how old the TV was?
No.
He did say it was older.
Well, yeah. Then, I mean, TVs are so cheap nowadays.
It is a 4K, according to the specs. So that's, I was going to say, if it was only a 1080, yeah, I could do a TV.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
it was 4K.
My TV's okay. A 1080, the one in the computer room.
Yeah.
There's a 1080. Yeah. But yeah, so I would say that we really, I've seen so many people have Wi-Fi problems. It's just, it's not as easy as here you go, flip it on.
Yeah.
The more expensive routers, the things that you generally find in businesses or in schools, do auto sensing. So you can do WPA2, WPA3, yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it just, they all talk to each other and say, oh, you've smart got this, TV. I can give you that. Fine. A lot of the lower cost routers, the less expensive routers, are stuck on one thing.
Yep. And I've seen that with our Eero router, that if I want to bring an old game console, my son's old game console, I had to turn off 5 gigahertz.
Yep.
So that, which is weird, because the 244 is still there, but the console wouldn't connect to it if 5 gigahertz was running.
That's weird. That is weird.
Yeah.
Well,
but it's apparently a big enough thing that it's in their FAQs. You know.
Well, it's probably because it's searching. It's doing a search.
Yeah, but it shouldn't. If it's searching at the 2.4 gigahertz frequency, it shouldn't even see the 5 gigahertz frequency.
Some of them don't. Yep. Again, that's poor weird programming.
That's crazy.
Poor programming and doing the search.
Yeah.
You know, if it's going to constantly do a search and it bumps into that 5 gigahertz, that's why it's
now my most of my stuff will do both either 2.4 or 5.
And now, but it won't do W.
But the router
gigahertz
doesn't, right? But the router doesn't do WPA3.
Yeah.
So you have to set the device to do WPA2, which any modern device will do. That's just software. Yeah. That part is just software. But you're right. Wi-Fi 6 and the 6 gigahertz stuff and the 7 and the 8 gigahertz stuff now. Most machines don't do any of that.
Yeah. Before we run out of time, we had talked about next week on the 9th, Apple has an event. Something surprise. But it's not a surprise. It's the iPhone Pro, iPhone 18 Pro, and the iPhone Fold.
Or surprise, we're not introducing that.
Well, maybe the new HomePod and maybe the new Apple TV.
Right.
That will be a surprise. But then at 7 p.m., the Apple Starter meeting, David Pogue is going to be speaking. Six-time Emmy Award winner. He currently does CBS Sunday mornings on their tech news, so that might have been the thing the other caller heard about.
Oh, maybe.
Watching this CBS Sunday morning. He's going to be talking about his new book, Apple, the first 50 years.
Which I'm in the middle of. Very good.
Yep. I still have some copies for sale, so we'll be selling those at the Cider meeting. So that's 7 o'clock, applecider.org. We use Google Meet for the
presentation.
And this Sunday, speaking of Google Meet, tomorrow night, we will be meeting in the Soundbites Lounge. So head on over to soundbites.org, click the link for the lounge, and you can join us at 9 p.m. Sunday night. And that'll be what we do there. And again, that's also on Google Meet. So we've got lots of space for lots of people. And again, we just spend an hour chit-chatting about whatever we chit-chat about. An hour plus these days. Everybody's always got a question right at 10 o'clock. So it takes a little longer to get things done, but that's all right. I'm happy to play anyway. So, yeah, we'll be doing that. And so join us. We'd love to have more people involved in that, and we're ready to answer whatever questions people have.
You don't have to turn your camera on if you don't want.
Or your microphone. That's absolutely right. You can just be a lurker.
I prefer you don't turn your microphone on.
Yeah, right. Leave your mic off unless you've got a question. That's always better, too. But we're always willing to answer people's questions, and that's what we're there for. So please feel free to come along and join us. And you can join us soundbites.org under some important links. The top one is the Soundbites Lounge. So you can see that it's at 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern. So those of you in the non-Eastern time zone will be able to join us at whatever time works for you all over the world, because it's Google Meet. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Really interesting stuff this week. Thank you very much. I want to thank everybody who voted in the poll. Still, you have a whole week to vote in the poll. And join us tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern in the Soundbites Lounge. And I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly, truly grateful to you that with your generous support, we continue to be fully, solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you? And hug your loved ones.